search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Welcome, BBCS, to episode number 147 of the Broken by Concept podcast, the number one solo queue educational motivational podcast. Curse, this is the second time we're recording this podcast.
That is correct. We should have Mr. Cupcake in the middle right now. We've got some explaining to do.
We do have some explaining to do, and we're going to throw one person specifically under the bus, our editor and cameraman, Charlie. He lost the SD card with all our audio files, but...
Now, he wants... What he told me, he said he wanted to tell people the whole story here.
Oh, okay. Is that okay, right?
So essentially, we did
throwing him under the bus.
So, essentially, we did one of our best
2-hour episode, yeah.
Very long episode. Covering a whole wide variety of topics.
With Coach Cupcake, who's a fellow coach we've had on episode
two times.
He's like top 10 in the O Solo Queue at the moment. He's very close to us. One of our former Direwolves players back in 2018. As a Direwolves alumni. Went to Worlds and MSI with us in 2018.
Yeah. And anyway, we're all excited. We're happy. We're going. And then me, because we record this at Nathan's place. So we were leaving Nathan's place. Me, Charlie, and Cupcake. And then he was a little excited, getting caught up in the whole, we're all together again, chatting. And then it was raining outside. And then we're walking home. And he gets home and it's disappeared. So the theory is that as he was, maybe we're pulling out an umbrella or whatever it might be, the SD card went flying out into the wilderness. And we have no SD card.
Yeah.
But...
it's the SD card's washed away to some beach right now. Some kid will have found the SD card, plug it in because it will work somehow, and be like, what is this?
The audio files
what
of the podcast.
What is this Broken by Concept
so
podcast?
So what we've done is that we actually have the video recorded on an iPhone. You can actually still hear it. It's not podcast level audio, obviously. If you're really interested in that episode, we're actually going to post it as a private link.
And let's say maybe for now, just in case something happens. So we don't promise.
Fingers crossed. If Charlie can pull through,
yeah.
There will be a link in the pinned comment at the top comment with the episode, a private link to the episode. But don't flame us for the audio. That is the reason the audio is a bit scuffed.
Yeah, if you're a very hardcore BBCer, the episode will be available to you, but it's not going to be the best listening experience.
That's correct.
So we want to recap the episode anyway.
We're
going to
recap a few of the things that we covered.
Some interesting things that we learned about. The first thing is the biggest thing he's noticed with his students, the type of person that gravitates towards a support role, which was he's found with his clients is that they're too defensive. They're not limit testing enough. Whereas, let's say for jungle or mid or something like that, we're overforcing, too aggressive.
Well, yeah, the conclusion that we came to, because we got into the discussion of does he often find himself encouraging people to limit test and take more quote-unquote risky plays and get uncomfortable? Or is he finding himself trying to restrain people rather than and slow people down? Like maybe don't use that flash aggressively or don't go for that play and kind of be more restrained. And the conclusion that we came to is I think we... based off his observations in his coaching sessions, more often than not, the clients are a lot more conservative and he has to encourage people to get out of their comfort zone and maybe make that proactive, aggressive play to find their limits. So, you know, at least for mid lane, it's usually the other way around. I would say majority of clients are probably overly aggressive and we've got to rein it in a little bit because they're limit testing all the time. And as a result, I'm having to be like, okay, let's just maybe not go for this play and then see what it feels like to not die. Whereas for him, it's like, okay, they're all staying alive, sitting way too defensively and they can't actually...
missing lots of opportunities.
Yeah, missing too many opportunities. And jungle's probably more...
I have 50-50. I mean, not even. I probably... because, dude, we're junglers, man. We barely get any action fights, you know what I mean? Compared to laning all the time, fighting all the time. So we see a fight, an objective, we're going for it, you know. Right. So sometimes we need to think bigger picture. Okay, is this good? Can we actually trade sides of the map? How much gold in our inventory? Then we look at all the fundamentals.
And it makes sense when you think about it, right? The support role attracts more probably conservative.
I mean, look at the word support, right? It's not like you know, when you're playing a champ like Pyke is like known for the role. That's not what you think about with support, which is like
an
hardcore carry, do lots of AD.
Yeah. Yeah, which was interesting. So that's one of the observations he's found. What was also very interesting, so we've actually briefly touched on this in our limited experience kind of coaching below gold. Now we're really dabbling in below gold, that we've gravitated towards being more getting into like the champ specifics. That's kind of been our inlet or inroad into kind of helping clients get results, rather than thinking about fundamentals holistically, really getting into the nitty gritty of developing champ mastery, understanding the champ's identity, how do I do damage with my champion, all that stuff. And he,
rather than like the job of the role more,
that's
so,
right,
especially like, for the lower ranks.
We kind of had it wrong at the start, right? We were probably approaching it more from a fundamental perspective, and then we've realized that's not probably the most effective way to go about it. And it's interesting because Cupcake has come to a very similar conclusion. He had a client, a Maokai client, and he realized that he was getting no results just thinking about support fundamentals. And he realized that he had to really get into the nitty gritty of, okay, what does Maokai want to do? How does Maokai fundamentally function? And he said that was, you know, he said that there are some classes of champions where you can kind of get away with more thinking holistically about the role, like that of, like Nautilus and stuff like these. He viewed it as a classes, right? There was what do you call the classes?
Enchanters, engagers, and then you had, he says that he barely has any clients. He calls it the warden class, which
wardens,
is like
yes.
Braum and stuff like that. So like
was that playmakers as well? Or was that another one?
No, that's not.
So there was four. I think there's four. There was enchanters.
Yeah.
Engagers.
Yep.
Wardens.
And I think there was an extra category that was like, hard that was to like, coach. That was like Bard and Pike.
And stuff like that. Yeah. So it was like four categories. And he says most of his clients fit in the engagers or the enchanters. And then there was a fifth one. There was also the mage supports. Like,
oh, yes, of course.
So there was five classes that he kind of did. And so his philosophy with coaching support was more revolved around, okay, you can have multiple kind of champions within a class, but you don't really want to bridge between classes as a beginner. You only really want to bridge that gap later on in Platinum, or I think he said, then you want to be able to play multiple classes. And he also went on a huge little spiel about the significance of support counterpick.
Yes.
And the ability to play multiple classes as a support player, right? There's a lot of value in being able to situationally pick a Renata or a Taric or a Braum or whatever it might be, or a Zillion. He was talking about one of his stories where he solo won a game in pro play with last picking Zillion support. Whereas you don't necessarily need to have that, but in the high ELO brackets, he's having to put more emphasis on that. Am I correct in saying that?
Yep, that's right. Especially the counter. We got into the pick order conversation about what do we value in terms of the counter picks, and he was very much on the side of like he loves counter pick.
Support is last pick essentially with top pick. Like top support being the two most.
Yeah,
important ones.
And we agree with that, but we were sort of like having top more so with the last.
Well, if he was in our team.
Yeah, we said we would like
give
him
you
last
pick.
Yeah.
Because giving support late pick in a draft is purely dependent on what the support champ pool is like. Hmm. I'm like, yeah, I would love to give you last pick, right, for Cupcake, right? Because he can counterpick that niche Renata or niche Resilient or whatever. He has this champion Ocean. But if I'm giving counterpick to a support that's going to pick Nautilus anyway, well, they might as well just pick support value earlier in the draft because they're not really going to give us any value. Sure, you hide it, you get less of a counterpick, but it is what it is. You know, I'd rather give that to the top laner. So yes, TLDR, having a champion Ocean as a high elo support is extremely valuable from what we could gather from that conversation as well.
I thought it was also funny, what I call it coaching narratives, but things that he was asking stuff about, when do you move on from he's recently had a big focus on like mid game stuff, and we sort of had a conversation where mid game, I mean, for me personally, when I'm teaching jungle, like it's very like you can structure it, like the games obviously get really chaotic, and I think that sometimes Cupcake sounded like he was sometimes not accepting chaos.
I think frame it a different way. What he was saying was this. He made the exact same mistake as I did in my coaching, which was you hyper-focus on the early game, right, to a fault. So it's like you're working with, say, a gold client, and you get their early game to like a diamond level, but their mid-game is like bronze.
Yeah.
When you don't, and so the mistake there was the early game focus is good, but you still should. There's a point where you should look at the mid game, even if their early game isn't perfect, to tick those 20%ers off, there's like two or three concepts in the mid game that you need to understand, both as a support player. I think for support, he was saying being aware of your jungler's location and following your jungler and syncing your resets with your jungler.
Yep.
And these concepts like that. These aren't
mid wave.
And being on mid wave and all that stuff. He was saying these aren't overly complex concepts, but if you ignore them, your mid game goes to shit. So you can have amazing early game, but you can be held down massively by your mid game. And I've made that exact mistake with clients before where I've overemphasized the early game and then to a fault. And then, you know, I have for example, Prab, I've worked on his early game with Yone and his early game's great, but then his mid game is like kind of like gold level, even though he's like, you know, probably a diamond level Yone early laner. So it's a bit weird. It's just a weird thing. I've made the mistake with clients before. So he's kind of going through those painful experiences. And also he was mentioning how he is learning when to stop a review.
Yes.
And going through that painful experience of feeling like he was saying how he felt.
He wasn't giving enough value.
Yeah. And we kind of got into that discussion of you can't think like that.
And sometimes, you know, VODs are VODs, guys. Sometimes it's just bad VODs, you know, like that's just the reality. Sometimes there's not much to learn. It's like, I've got my learning objective. Let's not look at anything else. Let's just focus on this. We're always, especially the way our programs are structured, it's about long-term approach.
Yeah.
Chipping away, lots of reviews, seeing lots of situations, building that pattern recognition rather than being like, here's one VOD, all problem solved.
Well, yeah, I think we also briefly touched on how there is kind of like this outdated perception of what coaching should look like in League of Legends, right?
Okay, I wouldn't really say coaching. It's more about what improving the game really looks like. Would you
both?
I think both.
Yeah,
because we talk about like 1 hour sessions.
Well, like think about what coaching has been like. Let's talk about both right for a second. Improving in League of Legends, in the part or like so far outside of us has been essentially, you know, you look at a whole VOD, take away a bunch of stuff, set learning objectives, and then you're set. Kind of is that what you mean? Whereas the way we interpret it is like, okay, we're not going to look through a whole VOD. Especially if a new client, we're going to look through basically the early game and we're going to overemphasize the early game because that's the most replicable shit. And then, you know, that might be a 20-minute review and then do multiple 20-minute reviews.
10, 20 minutes, next VOD. 10, 20 minutes, next VOD, next VOD, next VOD, next VOD.
And I think that like there is a culture that he's feeling like maybe weighed down, bogged down by a bit, where he feels like, okay, because other coaches are doing these 1 hour long, hour and a half, 2 hour long sessions, if my review goes for 15 minutes, is the client going to feel like they're getting enough value?
Yeah.
And kind of like the way I frame that, I'm like, well, look, at the end of the day, you're the professional. You're the one that knows what gets results. And also what I said is that, okay, if you're ever feeling nervous that a client thinks they're not getting enough value from a 20 minute review, then they can leave, get coaching elsewhere, and then realize that they're not getting any results. And a lot of the time they come back, which is actually what's happened in my program. People who weren't maybe bought into the way I do coaching left and come back months later because they've tried other people who do the way they do coaching, and then they end up just coming back anyway because they realize that was the most effective way. So I said, just stand your ground. You know, if you believe in that, you got to really all in with what you believe in.
League is not an overnight fix game. You got to chip away at it for a long period of time.
And for us, we want to feel like we can give you the magic pill.
Yeah,
like no we can pretend we are giving you the magic pill. It's easy for us because we're the ones in the power position. We could make it sound super complex and say, this is it. You just do this and you're this rank. We can make it sound however we want it to sound. But the reality is that we know that that's not really going to get you anywhere. Hence why we do shorter reviews, maybe pick one or two things away from it and then just tell you to get reps in.
Yeah. My reviews are so boring. I have an example. This is literally a review that happened this morning. This is like, you know, you said 20 minutes. This is about a minute and a half, 90 seconds. Red, Elise player. Red does Red Raptors Gromp and like forces a gank, fouls a gank. And I said, do Red Krugs Raptors. Red Raptors Gromp's an outdated path because Krugs now is really quick. You just so much more flexibility, versatility. Do Red Krugs Raptors. Implement that in your next games. That will change your life. That's it. That's it. That's all we're going. Interview next review, next person.
Yeah. And sometimes that's what that person needs, right? I mean, I do think your jungle coaching is quite different and unique to Delaney's. Like I can't only look at the levels 1 to 3 and move on. Like,
yeah,
but I see your point. You know, that is, you know, I would say the equivalent of that in mid lane is, yeah, dying to a level 3 gank, coming back, and then ruining a wave state, then dying again, or something like that. Then it's kind of like end of review. Yeah. But yeah, I see your point. Because playing from behind is very rare. But in saying that, I'm going to kind of expose myself here, and let's bounce back on this. This is interesting. Van is a long-term client of mine. And I've worked on her lane phase for a very long time. She's actually got very solid laning for the most part. Good E accuracy, plays a lot of Victor. Great skill shot accuracy, great wave management, great threat assessment. Ticks a lot of boxes, right? Because we focused on her early lane for such a long time, she's actually created a little bit of a nasty narrative where in the game, what happens is that if chaos happens and she dies, or like she gets behind, or she's not farming well, or the lane doesn't play out how she wanted it to play out, she starts kind of like getting really anxious and losing the flow of the game, because now she's judging herself. She knows the consequences
of those mistakes.
But it's preventing her from expressing her best self and actually punishing the enemy mistakes. And so what I've done in a review today...
And that's very common, by the way.
Yeah, that's extremely common.
And that's, I think that's a good to have, because you're very much knowing every mistake that you've made. Obviously, that's not going to help the rest of the game.
Yeah.
But it's
something we can work on.
It's things you can work on. I think that's much better than a player autopilot and thinking they're the best player of all time. You know, it's like, oh, who cares? Oh, I'm blaming this person now. I'm blaming this person for the mid game mistakes when I've messed up my lane phase that dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, they're both problems, but yeah, the Van one is probably a bit of an easier problem to work with. And so what I did on her this review that I did today was that I actually went past, so she died like two or three times in like the other game to like chaotic skirmishes, like very fast paced chaotic game. Instead of ending the review, we just went on into the mid game, and I explained, okay, they're going to make mistakes like here, and they make mistakes. Just keep your farm up, do what you can. And she ended up like winning a game that she would have probably like, it just showed to her that you can kind of break through that narrative in a way. And even if you die in the early game, you can still win if you express your best self, or the enemy are just going to make mistakes. That actually ties into a big trend I'm noticing right now, especially my platinum clients. It's like kind of like a plague going on right now in the MLA where it's like if you're in our programs, you're talking with a lot of typically pretty knowledgeable people, and also a wide variety of different ranks as well. And when you're talking to a lot of people that actually take the game seriously, you automatically assume that everyone has that level of understanding of the game and that level of intention and focus and intensity and that conscious.
Yeah.
So then when like mistakes happen, what I'm noticing is that people in the MLA are like more inclined to give up or be a little bit less confident playing from behind, because they assume that everyone knows what they're doing and is playing beautifully from ahead. And I'm like, I had a client literally... the enemy jungle got like a double kill bot at level 3, and then he thought the game was over. Like, he thought the game was screwed.
Because in his mind, it's like, okay, that person knows exactly what to do, how to close it out.
He's going to play this perfectly.
They've been in this program. And
he's Platinum 4. This guy, he was in Platinum 4. The enemy jungle got a double kill bot at level 3.
Yeah.
And he literally felt like, okay, I've got to do something. The game's like probably over. Like, that's his mindset.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, there is a reason this person is in Platinum 4. They are making super ginormous mistakes. And that jungler gave a shutdown later on, but he wasn't in the position to punish it because he was so jacked up and made too many mistakes himself because he was trying to force shit, you know? So people make mistakes at every rank. Big fucking mistakes.
Yeah, I played in the, you know, Grandmaster Challenger lobby yesterday, and I just sort of just checked out of the game. Like, it was so far ahead. They had a really good scaling comp. And I knew we should have played sides, but we're just ARAM in mid, and then one team fight lost, the next team fight lost, then I'm like, oh, there you go, then we just lose, like, throwing the game. Like, it's not so much about knowledge, it's just about people get lazy.
Exactly. You get very lazy. Discipline and execution, and executing the
basics. I even felt, I was getting lazy, I was super lazy in my game.
It's very easy to get complacent. Like, I'm 2-0, 3-0.
Like, this game's over.
And then you take that, maybe you don't reset, or you don't ping back, you think you can outplay, you give a bounty, boom. It's so easy to throw a game.
Yeah, we'll CG mid instead of just doing the goddamn Baron.
Exactly.
No, we'll dive in mid instead of doing the goddamn Baron. God, that's annoying.
So, was there anything else from Cupcakes?
Nope. I think you're interested in that, go and watch maybe there's a special link in the pinned comment of this episode on YouTube. So if you're watching on Spotify, you have to go to the YouTube, Broken by Concept, for it. Housekeeping, Curtis, before we move on to our next topic. So we are going to have a guest 100%, and we're not going to lose the files next time for our next episode. We're going to have a pro top lane player. He's consistently rank one on our server, Biopanther. And what we want...
Also Direwolves alumni.
And also another Direwolves alumni went to MSI and Worlds with us.
That's
with
correct.
Cupcake.
Yep, that's right.
Same team. Oh, no, sorry. It was just Worlds, not MSI. We had...
Yes.
Yeah, we had Chippies at that point. So what we're going to do, what we want from you guys is he's going to be educating us about top lane coaching. So we want you to send us in recorded VODs, upload them to YouTube.
Yep.
POV. Make sure it's POV, your POV, not record the client replay. Like, no. Record your POV. There's plenty of
things like you use Outplayed, Streamlabs, OBS, whatever you need to use.
And we want any ranks, and then send them to our brokenbyconceptshow@gmail.com. The email is in the description in the YouTube comments.
And we'll probably pick a few to maybe break down with Biopanther on the next episode.
Maybe we'll probably do like four or five, I think
we'll see how we go.
So any rank, if you want, if you're a top laner or you know a person that plays top lane who doesn't listen to this podcast because this is only a jungle and mid podcast
and a little bit of support
then yes, send those in and we will break them down on next episode.
I want to talk about something very important here, Nathan. So
Curtis, when is something not important
that we talk about? Just
this is really
ginormous. Okay. This is huge.
I'm excited.
Okay, so in League, there are many, you've probably seen this in your soul too with clients, where they get very anxious and they have mental blocks in very particular situations. It could be mental blocks versus a specific champion. It could be mental blocks in a specific situation in a game. And typically this results in a hell of a lot of anxiety, a lot of anxiousness, a lot of nerves, feeling scared, frightened, whatever. A classic example from a mid lane perspective might be a particular matchup, maybe versus Zed or versus Yasuo. They have a mental block. And typically these mental blocks start when maybe your champion just isn't good into Zed. Maybe you play a lot of Orianna and then, you know, you played versus a lot of Zed when you're in the lower elo brackets. You didn't know how Zed worked. You had a lot of painful experiences. And therefore, when you come into this situation, you start to get very anxious, filled with anxiety. Okay. What's an example for this for a jungler?
I'm playing a ganking jungler and I have no options in the early game. You know, I'm getting stressed. I'm getting anxiety. I'm getting, you know, oh no, I'm going to get outscaled by the enemy jungler.
Okay, so what we typically see and the reason these mental blocks really kind of get perpetuated and continue on is because we tend to avoid them. So what happens is a cycle. It's a cycle of anxiety. So it starts with anxiety. That's kind of, there's an anxiety-inducing event. And I'm actually going to post, there'll be a little image here. We'll post it on a graphic so you guys can follow along with me here. And then it leads to avoidance. Right. And so essentially what happens is that we will try to avoid this situation as much as we possibly can, either by banning Zed or not playing that champion anymore. Or, if we're talking about ranked anxiety, literally not queuing up. Right. That's a classic one. Avoiding. That's what we tend to do. It's like a defense mechanism. Let's do whatever I can possible to avoid this situation. Right. But then what happens if you avoid it, it's like short-term relief from that anxiety. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, I don't have to put myself in that situation anymore, right? I don't have to verse it. I can just ban it. I'm just going to ban it every single game. But then what happens is that it actually leads to long-term anxiety growth, because every single time you're banning that Zed, you're actually simultaneously telling yourself that you can't deal with it. You're actually simultaneously telling yourself that you're reinforcing that narrative. You're reinforcing that you should be anxious in this situation. Every single time you ban Zed, it gets worse and worse and worse over time, to the point where it becomes a really, really big problem. So I'm actually going to read something here that I noted down to you, which is kind of reinforces this one here. Sorry, one moment.
Yeah,
so it's called, and so this is actually cognitive behavioral theory and avoidance. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So you say, for example, you ban Zed. The more you ban Zed, the more anxious you become. Avoidance kind of being that key word. And that is why for people who have ranked anxiety for such a long time, it becomes a huge problem. Because they've every single time they've not queued up and told themselves to play normals instead, that's simultaneously reinforcing the idea that they should be really anxious when, you know, when
ranked is a very scary thing.
That's right. It's ranked terrifying. Is a very, very scary thing. And the longer it goes on, the worse it gets. Yeah. And so let's say you one trick to champ. Let's say you're one trick for a champion for like years and you've banned this matchup for years. You are in a huge hole. Like, you're going to literally have panic. You're going to start sweating. It's going to be a massive anxiety-inducing event when you initially don't
I mean, you'll just avoid it. You'll just check out.
Exactly.
You'll just check out. Like, I've lost the game anyway.
Yep, exactly. You would automatically assume that you'll lose that situation.
Because that's the defense mechanism of figuring out how to solve the problem.
Yeah, and I think this... And the reason I wanted to talk about this is because I think this applies to many people... It could be a numerous amount of parts of the game. It could be mental block with a champion, mental block with a game state, maybe Baron Smites. Baron Smite would be a really common one.
Yeah.
You know, diving towers. Maybe some people have mental blocks with diving towers because their champion doesn't dive well or they've had...
Yeah, dives. That is a really good one, actually. Yeah. A lot of... I will have many reviews, especially, around the high gold platinum thing where, you know, the landers are playing a wave pretty well. I'm like, why are you missing not diving this? It's like, oh, like dives don't work. They just avoid the dives and just
that's
not,
right, avoidance.
You know, when it's just a free kill, you know, like this is a really good dive because they have so many bad negative experiences.
Exactly. All they're doing there is they're actually avoiding the anxiety. They're not avoiding the event itself. They're avoiding the anxiety. They don't want that feeling
of like messing up the dive. Like even themselves, like they've messed up the dive. So they're anxious that they're going to fuck up the dive.
And when they get remotely close to it, they will be anxious. That will make them play worse, which reinforces the narrative, right?
Yeah.
So the key, and this is, you know, that's the whole, you know, this is all stuff that's, you know, out there in psychology, like exposure. You know, exposing yourself.
Yeah,
to that.
And this is where we talk about just the importance of just inting the game.
That's right.
Like me, when I was just learning level 3 invades, I lost so many games for level 3 invades with my Rek'Sai when I was. But then over time, I mean, I would just keep chipping away. Yep, solo is the game, int the game, get flamed by my team. Cool, move on the next game, and eventually you start figuring out the patterns, the pattern recognition, how to play certain situations, certain matchups, certain clear times. But I only would able to do that. If I'm
exposing myself to that again and again.
And if you painful. It's painful, though.
It's very, very painful.
It's not easy.
It's short-term pain for long-term gain.
Yes.
Whereas this one is short-term relief for long-term anxiety.
Yes.
Right?
There you go. It's perfectly literally the opposite. Said.
Yep. And so for mid lane, you can actually isolate a matchup, do 1v1s. You can literally grind 1v1s if in a matchup. Or let's say it's ranked anxiety. That's why we say literally play... A 3 block a day, no matter what, rain, hail, or shine. No matter how anxious you are, you're literally sweating bullets over the keyboard. It doesn't even matter. You're gonna even if you lose every single game, play 20 games, 25 games in 3 blocks. By the end of like 2-3 weeks, you'll be completely fine.
Yeah. I always say you can get pretty good at League pretty fast. You know, and especially building the confidence in League. It happens
breaking these narratives. You can do it through exposure, but it's painful, and I understand it is really, really, really hard. But you got to do it. You can't sit there avoiding banning Zed every single game. It's just not. It's not realistic.
No. It's just. It just goes to show how much League is a mental game. I literally had someone in Soul 2 mention. I can't remember the story, so we'll move on. Come back to me.
That was a very insightful story
about how much League is a mental game.
Did you want to talk about your topic here?
Oh, okay. So. Riot recently have been giving us some information about mid-season stuff, Curtis.
Okay.
Have you seen this?
No.
About...
What is it?
They're updating bots in League of Legends.
Okay.
This could be very interesting for new players and even potentially the coaching space.
Okay.
So I'm going to read the article here. This is a little bit lengthy, but I'll take the points that are important. So it starts off with saying just some history about bots. Bots have been in the game forever. Since inception, Kurt has played like 1,000 bot games when he learned the game.
Bot games.
Kurt, we've talked about that story before on the podcast. So we still only supported the bots we had, which made up a small subset of champions available at that time. Plus, we had 2 champions in top lane and no jungle, a generally bad representation of the team makeup you would experience nowadays. So basically saying that the bots pool has always been really limited. Not many champions, and obviously you verse bots and they don't have a jungler, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So they get Riot's going to be reinvesting in bots. So over the past few months, we've reinvigorated our investment in bots. While we were never uninvested. We needed to figure out the right approach for both the league of today and the league of tomorrow. When looking at player feedback and pay points, we could see that many players were wanting a low-stakes, league-like experience that's less stressful to practice and get better overall, especially with friends who are newer to the game. This is their goals, Curtis, for bots. We have a few main goals for this project, including provide an upgraded bot experience that better mirrors the common League of Legends gameplay experience. Bots that jungle, gank, and take dragons. Team AI that helps bots work more strategically and cohesively. And bots that can react towards meta shifts.
Wow, that'd be cool.
They want to provide a better way to learn and improve in League that is stressful than PvP. So expand a champ pool, bots that work as a team, bots that can scale to match your skill for folks looking to get good. Build our bot tech to be scalable, maintainable, and expandable so designers have fun levels to pull to delight players. New game modes, editable bot behavior, and tools that enable quick iteration.
Yeah, so I'm assuming you could like maybe, I mean, we actually spoke about this off camera, how you could maybe tell, it's like AI, where you could like pick the style of the bot, right? It's
yeah, like a certain team
super composition aggressive or like defensive, farm oriented or whatever. That'd be cool if that was the case.
Yeah, like it's like this is going to be like a really hardcore pressure early game or something like that.
Ganking jungler, early ganking jungler, gank set up.
Yeah, like lane is that like setting up waves perfectly.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. So hopefully, it'll be like a scale, like how sophisticated you want their laning to be.
So they basically say that they're still not going to be as advanced as skilled players. It's more just for newer players, and again, mimicking the new player experience more so. So what actually League of Legends is rather than, you know, you verse two like a Darius and like a Lux top lane or something like that.
With Ghost Cleanse or something, you know.
So, I mean, I'll link the whole article. You guys can read into it. But essentially, those are the goals I sort of just wanted to demonstrate. And they have a whole graph about how they're making the bot decision-making, which is really interesting, especially for me.
It's a huge step in the right direction, right? Yeah. I mean, we've been quite critical of Riot's introductory, the whole like tutorial and beginner phase of the game, right? Considering how sophisticated the game is, you know, we spoke about this at length in other episodes, but you know, how shitty the tutorial is, how limited the bots are. You go straight into bots from normal games, and then you're like, this is a different game, right? Essentially. And look, and we said maybe that they wanted to give the responsibility to content creators. Like that was one of the hypotheses, right? That like maybe they wanted to outsource the educational part of the game to give other people opportunities to like make a career out of it. Maybe that was an element of it. I don't know, right? But they definitely were dropping the ball with that aspect.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think bots is, it's definitely the way to go. I mean, again, you have that experience if you played 1,000 bot games, you know, like it does work. And if they could level up that experience, that would be great for new players.
More champions, that would be amazing.
Absolutely.
Because think about it. We spoke about this in terms of the three phases in our below goal programs, like the true beginners, intermediate beginners, and advanced beginners. The true beginners, we're talking pre-level 30 to like in iron. A lot of those players just need to know what all of the champions do, what all the items do, and just basic game knowledge, how the game fundamentally works. Imagine if the bots were sophisticated enough that it would be able to teach you all of that information. That would be amazing.
Incredible.
That would be so, so good because there are so many people that have, you know, they're anxious to jump into PvP games, understandably, given how much there is to learn. They literally, I've got people in my program that are true beginners that don't know what all the champions do, and they're forced to learn what all the champions do in normal games, right? And as we know, sometimes normal games can be quite intense and they can get, you know, quite heated. Being able to do that, having been able to do that in bot games, that would be amazing.
Yep, absolutely.
Fingers crossed.
So we'll see how it goes. Apparently it's going to be on PBE in the next couple of weeks. So that's exciting.
Looking forward to that. Any other things before we move on, Nathan?
I think that can be it for the topics for today.
Do you want to move into
Summoner School?
Summoner School, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Is that the order?
Yeah. And then we do clips, remember, Curtis?
Lovely.
Curtis, take a look. You should know the order by now.
I know. It's unacceptable.
All right, so the post for today, this one has 479 upvotes, and the title of this one is How Do I Get Over Everyone Having the FF15 Mentality? I'm so tired of every single game, at least one person on my team says FF15 in chat literally 5 to 10 minutes into the game, where the winner is not decided yet, and how often it's a 4-1 surrender vote at 15 minutes. Even if my team is winning, the enemy just surrenders at 15 and I can't even play out the game. I literally had a top lane I want to FF at 4 minutes earlier. 4 minutes. You've barely killed a few waves. Oh, so someone had said, wants to FF 4 minutes in. You've barely killed a few waves of minions at that point. How do you deal with this mentality? I know we can't control our teammates, but is there anything that can help cope with this? I'm tired of just playing games where everyone just gives up so damn quick. We're in low elo. Leads are thrown so often.
I want to talk about this because I'm going to talk about toxic coders for a little bit.
Okay.
So back in the olden days,
it's the alter ego,
when I was, I went through my toxic phase when I was a young little
whippersnapper.
And I was infamous for just wanting to just FF. That was like, just FF as soon as the game was remotely make a mistake, just FF, right? Kind of psychoanalyzing myself here, like a huge part of it really was, that whole giving myself permission to, we spoke about how it's painful to try and fail. There's something it's kind of like a defense mechanism where if I type FF, I basically broadcast to the world that it's kind of like I've given myself permission to lose the game.
The game result doesn't matter at that point anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of like I've given up. And so if I give up, and like a lot of the time I would FF knowing that it wouldn't go through and I wouldn't want it to go through, right? This is the weird thing. I wouldn't want it to go through, but yeah. I would press FF. And then what I would want is that everyone to know that like I'm not trying now, when in reality, it's kind of like now giving myself permission to try and feel like
if you fail, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, if I fail, it doesn't matter. It's kind of like, I don't know. It's something weird going on there. Yeah. Like there's something. It was a defense mechanism somewhere. It was like made me feel better about myself. It's like oh fuck this. I'm not gonna try anymore. But I am secretly trying. It's kind of like a facade or trying to.
It's like now there's no expectation on performance anymore.
Yeah, it's like in my mind, I've already kind of told everyone that I've given up. So now if we win, it's like kind of like whatever. I don't know. There's something weird going on there, and I think a lot of people when they type FF. Or when they say that, for example, that person who's, said give up at 4 minutes, he doesn't really mean that. I'm sure there are people that do. But in my experience, being on that side of things, I don't think they really mean it. It's just like a vent as well. It could be a venting for some people. It's like, fuck this situation. I'm screwed. My wave frozen. I don't know what to do. FF. And that's, one of the most common forms of frustration in Tilt and League of Legends is simply not knowing what to do. Maybe that guy doesn't know what to do. And he's like, well, in my mind, I don't know how to fix the wave. My lane's screwed. I don't know how to play from behind. So I'm just going to press FF. Get me out. Like, they might not even think the game is like fully over, but they just...
There's no solutions.
For them, like, the game might as well be over because they don't know how to contribute to the game set anyway. Like, imagine if you hadn't learned how to lose gracefully and you're not really sophisticated with your wave management and you don't really have great quality resets and you don't really understand jungle tracking or anything. A lot of the time, especially as a top laner, if you mess up in the other game, you might as well feel like the game is over if you don't really know what to do. But their mindset is, again, rather than getting into the details and try... They've always got that thing in the back of their mind. If I can just like try half-ass, I've always got that excuse that I never gave it my all anyway. So I have an excuse to fail. That's kind of what I think it boils down to.
Excuse to fail. And then it's like, so then, their rank is not going to be, they're not confused it's trying to make sense of things in their minds. In a way.
And so I think that, we could sit here for hours trying to psychoanalyze all the reasons why you would want to FF. And at the end of the day, I still disagree with the direction that Riot took in terms of the 15 FF thing. I personally know some people are going to disagree with that and they like it because there's a lot of people wasting time in games. But I think Marzion from the MLA made a really good point about, and we spoke about this before, about how it's sending the wrong message, right? Like Riot promoting the idea that you should give up at 15, even if it is objectively quote unquote better via the stats, it's pushing the wrong idea, in my opinion. And, you know, especially in the lower ELO brackets, below, honestly, even below master tier, there are unbelievable amount of mistakes being made in diamond, let alone in platinum, let alone in gold, let alone in silver. Like, it is it's shocking. Like, if you are remotely switched on and able to use your LOL states and read the map state and have somewhat a champ mastery, you're going to find an angle into the game if you can stay disciplined. As long as you're not that person, right? So, it's tough mentally. But, I just disagree with the way Riot still went about it, personally, to this day. And the reality is that you can't do anything about it. The reality is that you got to do your job. You got to make your teammates' life as easy as possible to win through good quality communication, good quality fundamentals, doing your job. And if you do that time and time again, if anything, this can work to your advantage because run the numbers. You've got four people in your team tilted. They've got five. If you're the rock solid factor in every single game
over the long run, I mean, he mentions, you know, how do I deal with this? How to cope with this? I mean, the answer is really simple: slash mute all every game, and then unmute pings
and drag the FF box to the side. That's what I do.
Yeah, there you go.
So I drag the FF box, so I don't even see the FF thing come up.
Yeah. Because, even though it's happening, you can drag it off
the screen. I don't know how many people know that, by the way. You can literally drag it off the screen.
Yeah. That's a good tactic. Yeah, the idea is that just try and keep tricking your brain of just like, what's the next best play? And just, you'll be such a deadly player if you're just always focused about what's the next best play rather than thinking about this stuff. Because this is inevitable. This is League of Legends.
The one of the most misunderstood concepts, Nathan, is being hard to beat.
Yes, being the harder player.
Like, I think you're a big proponent of this. Being hard to beat. It's simultaneously simple, but really hard to execute. It's a simple idea. It's a simple concept, but fucking hard to execute.
It's about, the quote that I always say is, how do I make this game as hard as possible for the enemy team to win? It's not about me winning anymore. How do I make it just difficult for them?
Exactly. And when you get that out of your head, it's not about me winning anymore and it's hard to beat. Oftentimes, they will throw make mistakes. Because how many... Guys, if you're actually really honest about it, how many people do you actually believe the enemy is going to end the game cleanly?
No.
They're not. And this ties into one of the other things you probably get all the time, Nathan, where it's like, where we say probably things like, okay, when you're behind, maybe give that dragon, right? Ping back or ping them back off that or take control, right? What's the common response? Oh, but they won't listen. Well, okay, even if there's a 15% chance that they listen, you might as well do it. Right? If there's a 15% chance that your team listened to you about giving that dragon a minute in advance.
Increase your odds.
Increase your odds. Yeah. Increase your odds.
Yep. Remember, League's a long-term game. That one game difference. Remember, one game nowadays that's like, 50 LP.
I'm going to butcher this. I'll see if I can actually find it. Necklace did the stats. So what he did, he actually went through all of his games and actually tallied up the amount of games that he was... here we go. I've got the stats here. Ready? So here we go. I'm still having problems with giving up too early on free wins and throwing games. As an exercise, I went through my past 100 games. 60 wins, 40 losses. I counted all of the losses, and out of the 40 losses, 10 were due to thinking the game was won and then throwing. 10 out of 40.
Wow.
That's one in four... That's one in four, 25% of losses. In LP terms, that's 500 LP. How insane is that? I did it to really internalize the pain of those losses. I'm not saying I would be 500 LP more because if I won those games, I'd be in a higher ELO and games would be harder.
Yeah.
But still, think about that. That was 25% of his losses. 25% of just giving up. You thought it was a free win, you got complacent. And that's as a master tier player.
Love that. When you run the numbers.
That is a shit ton of LP.
People like to get in, like even maybe this post here.
And he's a well-coached player. This is a very high-level player. Mm. Imagine what this number would be for the average league player.
Mm. Yeah. It's very easy to just get tunneled on like those one or two. Like even this the guy who made this post, like... You know, in terms of his overall journey, maybe this is frustrating, but this is probably such little games, really, that at the end of the day, he's still getting a four vote surrender vote. He says it's happening all the time. It's really not. Come on.
Well, we know why, though. People think it happens all the time, right? Because the negatives
the negative experiences sear more in our brains that's than right. the positive experiences.
We remember them more.
Yeah. So, yep, that's our summer school post. Yep, my advice is, yep, mute all and just distract your brain from...
I love that, by the way, just faking it till you make it as well, tricking your brain. I'm a massive proponent. I say that to a lot of my clients, by the way. I said, even if you don't believe it, even if you don't even want to do it, just tell yourself,
yeah.
how tell do yourself. I, like I was telling Van, you know, as well, okay, you're 0-3 here and you want to give up, you want to check out, whatever. Just literally trick yourself, fake it till you make it. Okay,
what's next? Here we go.
What's next? And yeah, like, how do I make this game as hard as possible? Yeah. You don't want to do it. It's going to feel miserable. Do it anyway.
Yeah.
And then, you know, over time, it's like it adds up. It definitely adds up. Are we moving Clips Corner?
All right, Curtis. Here we go. Intro us into Clips Corner.
And what's the Bruce Buffer thing? How does he do it again?
Once again, very underprepared.
I'm sorry, guys. It's just embarrassing. So we're just going to go into the Clips Corner now. And welcome, everyone, to Curtis's Clip Corner. All right, so I was doing some research on Echo. This is Jialong Ban, the Echo, Chinese Echo. Probably one of the best Echo players in the entire world, right?
Love it.
Just to give context, Chinese Challenger player. And in this VOD, he was versing a Chinese Challenger Vlad OTP. Okay? Now, I was just going through this VOD, just chilling, just looking at his gameplay. Now, basically, he's doing a bunch of heavy trading here. You know, we're level 5. Going for some really, really aggressive trades here. Vlad is very low. He tries to flash and finish off this Vlad. Vlad is able to heal back up with the Q. And they're both sitting on, you know, roughly 150 HP at this time. Very, very extreme heavy trading. And he's trying to get the wave out and maybe reset. He's greeting a little bit here. He probably knows he needs to reset. Disrespects the Vlad Q. And then this Vlad just flash Qs his face and kills him, right? Now, when I was looking at this, you know how people get demoralized about making mistakes and, you know, they kind of, maybe they get self-conscious about showing mistakes in VODs, bringing VODs to us,
yeah.
Or they feel as though when they make a mechanical blunder or they make a mistake, sometimes they even feel embarrassed. Like, people feel ashamed of making mistakes. And they automatically assume that the best players in the world just don't make mistakes, yeah. Or something. And what I really wanted to show here, guys, in this clip is that this is literally probably up there with one of the best Echo players in the entire world. And this is what I said. I sent this to one of my Felipe, and I was saying, if we remove the timestamps here, get rid of all the Chinese writing, and you said, okay, and someone said this was a platinum Echo versus Vlad. Tell me you would be able to know that. Like, this was what rank? This is Challenger. Mm. No way. Mm. You remove everything. Show this as an in-client VOD. You couldn't tell me if this was a platinum Echo, a gold Echo, a diamond Echo. We have no idea. You would have no idea. You would expect this, potentially, from a low plat Echo, right? It's like, all right, Vlad's walking up with the empowered Q in a second.
I wonder where he's going to play the Q. Here's Flash.
And what I'm saying, and I'm not here to say Jialong Ban's a bad player or anything. What I'm saying is that welcome to League of Legends, you know? It's like the best players in the world. Every mistake is basic. That's the main point. You know what I talk about? No mistake in League is complex. Even the best players in the entire world are still making what you all deem to be, say, a call, basic mistakes. And so this clip is more of a reminder to all of you out there. Don't be ashamed of your mistakes, no matter how basic they look. Take the learning from it. It could be a very specific Cham threat assessment. It could be your attention was directed elsewhere. We have no idea what was going on with Jialong Ban's mind right now. He could have been thinking about the jungler. He could have been thinking about something else. I have no idea. Maybe he thought he used Flash before. We have no idea, right? We can only make assumptions about why he died here with this basic mistake. My point being is that this should give us confidence. Guys, this should give you confidence. If we're seeing this from the best Echo in the world, guys, right? Like, don't feel bad about your mistakes.
Yep. The journey is, you know, it's just polishing these things up. And there's so much, just understanding there's so much room for error in League of Legends.
Yes.
You know, the game's just ticking. There's so much chaos. There's so much going around.
We have no idea how much is in his mental stack. He could have been thinking about everything else. And yes, albeit these mistakes wouldn't be common. Otherwise, he wouldn't be a Challenger player. Mm. But they happen.
Mm.
And it's the consistency of these mistakes. It's not about whether or not you should or shouldn't make a mistake. It's the amount of them and the consistency of those mistakes. So, you know, this is not the most insightful clip, but it's more of a mental to give you guys a bit of a refresher.
Refresher, double check, good message. I like it. Just about, you're not expecting yourself to be, you know, again, it's about reducing these levels of mistakes, yes. Obviously the consistency, but it's great to see that this is happening. This is people's visualization of some like Korean or like fake girl, China,
best echo in China. They like, imagine, exactly. It's like if someone sent this VOD and then you asked the average, say, platinum echo player, would you think this is the best Chinese echo, the best echo in the world? You'd probably say, oh, no, of course they wouldn't make that mistake. Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. And I guarantee, guys, if you actually can find these amazing player streams, they make a lot of mistakes. Like mistakes that you would be surprised to even see. You look at Beifeng, sometimes you make silly mistakes, or you watch Mangofish, like really, really basic mistakes. Yeah. It's humbling. It's really cool to see. I love looking at it. I love looking at the real stream boards because you see what their games look like properly. Yeah. Not their highlighted montage clips, the real shit. Yeah.
It's messy.
It's messy.
This is what I love.
This is the reality.
I love real League of Legends. And this is the thing that we and coaches, and I think the coaches industry is very guilty of. It's just this idea of perfection and perfection all the time. Yes, that's what we're sort of getting towards.
Yes, we're striving for that.
But it's the level of focus, discipline. Like, League's so hard of a game. It's unbelievable.
From an execution perspective. Yeah,
don't feel bad for making these mistakes.
That's correct. Moving on.
Mailbag time. Away we go. Jingle, jingle, jingle song. All right, first question here comes from Kenneth. The title of this email is Struggling to Play After Long Breaks. Dear Curtis and Nathan, hello guys, Kenneth here and greetings from Hong Kong. I'm writing this letter after
Oh, it's Kenneth.
Oh, Kenneth. You're Kenneth.
Yeah, I went to hiking with him.
Oh, cool. I'm writing this letter after I have finally finished my uni finals and essays and have the chance to hop back to the League grind. I have basically stopped playing League for the past 2 weeks, except for a few ARAM games, and found myself hitting rock bottom. I feel my mechanics is shit, my decision making is non-existent, and my roaming is just a total disaster. God, I love this. That sentence, Kenneth, you got me so excited. I love that. But I feel like there are more to this problem. It feels more like a stage 4 problem rather than a stage 1 or 2. I found myself keep thinking about not playing at the level I should be because I didn't play for 2 weeks, during laning phase and losing focus. Even in reviews, I would automatically attribute my mistakes to the 2-week break and think I would not make that mistake if I didn't take the break. I'm very curious on what you guys think about this issue and how to tackle it at stage 4 and stage 1. Especially from Nathan, as he has experienced years of break, then coming back. Did he encounter this stage 4 problem, and what did he do to counter this problem? Thanks, guys. Love the podcast. So, I guess I'll respond to that. So, I've said it before about accepting level of play. And, I mean, That's such a perfect quote, Kenneth. I would not make this mistake if I didn't take the break. That's just, I mean, it's living in the past, isn't it? Like, you're not moving forward. You're not accepting reality. Like, League skill, it comes and goes, like, very quickly, especially focus and muscle memory. Like, even right now, like, I've been focusing a lot on my lower ELO, my bronze, silver, iron program, learning these new champions. And I recently played, like, a block on my main, and just on my pace and everything's just so slow. It's just, and I just need to accept, like, it's just going to take me. I actually said at the end of the last Cupcake episode, like, I'm not even close to a challenger level player right now. I'm actually in master tier right now as we speak this episode, just hovering high master. And yeah, I got a lot of work to do, you know, but you just got to get back into it, getting back into the details. Like, there's nothing really you can do except this is my reality. And then just keep moving forward, keep moving forward, keep moving forward.
Yeah, and I really do think, though, when you come back from an extensive break, there's a shit ton of what I call just, like, throwaway games.
Yes.
You are just going to have to play for sometimes weeks, you know, 2-3 weeks to get back into it. Just don't give them too much weight, right? Like, especially your first week or two, like, the first week of games especially,
yeah.
Those games should be played with the intention to build back muscle memory, not even get remotely close to your level of play or improve the game or anything. Simply just build a feel for the game back.
Yep.
Now, for some people, it might take a week, 2 weeks, could even take longer depending on how long your break was and how much you played the game in general, how much you're playing the game when you come back. But feel it out. And I think a huge part of it is managing expectations. It could just take a while. And I don't really think there's anything wrong with that line of thought, by the way. Okay, yes and no. So let me reframe this. He is objectively true. It is objectively true. Like that statement where, yes, I probably wouldn't make this mistake if I didn't take the break. But where that gets sketchy is, where do you draw that line, and for how long are you able to say that for? You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, and is it even useful to say? So number one, what are the positives of that sentence? In my mind, the positives are, you're aware that you are in a period of rust. You are aware that you are in the phase of building back muscle memory, right? That is a positive.
In the end stage, because like, I'm aware right now, I'm ready. I've making all the same mistakes I've made before.
Not confused,
inting these games, troubles in the game. All right, next.
So that's a positive, right? It allows you to be efficient with your games and understanding where you are on your journey. The negatives, though, is that you can hold on to that narrative for a long time, right? You could hold on to that belief for longer than you...
Yeah, in my case, it was 2 years.
Exactly.
I just need to get more games in and I'll get my skill level back rather than review it and get into the details.
It's a very sexy narrative to hold on to, right? Yeah. Because it's a beautiful defense mechanism. So I feel as though it's okay to have that understanding that there is an element of rust, but at some point you're going to have to draw the line where it's like, okay, I played the game now for 2-3 weeks. I've got back into it. I can't really say it's rust anymore. I got to accept that this is now my level of play. That's at least for me personally. I would be a theorist if I were to tell you I wouldn't think like that, because I would think like that. If I went away and took a break for 3 weeks, I know 110% my mindset would be, okay, I wouldn't make this mistake. And I would probably have that for probably around 2 weeks. And then I'd probably draw a line and be like, okay, I've gotten worse. I need to accept reality. That's kind of at least for me anyway. I know we might differ on that. That's just for me. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, thinking back, I mean, yeah, I mean, I held on to it.
You just held on for it for way too long.
For two years.
Yeah. Unironically,
2 years. And yeah, just ego. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, like Kenneth, like I just wouldn't stress too much. Like, you know, he's very fresh coming back. So this gets concerning after a month.
That's right. It's the time period here that we're talking about. Like, that's what I'm saying. In the short term, it doesn't matter to have that line of thought. It's only a problem when it's persistent over a long period of time. We're talking 3-4 weeks, you know?
Yep. Don't get to 2 years like me, Mr. Kenneth.
Yeah. And then at the end of those 3-4 weeks, then you just accept wherever you're at, you're at.
Yep.
And then just build from there.
It's like, yep, don't worry about whatever a player was in the past is irrelevant.
You're only as best as your last block paid. That's it.
Yep.
You're only as good as your last block paid.
All right. Next question here comes from, there's no name here. Title of this email is Only Banning One Champion.
Here we go.
Hello, Mr. Mid and Mr. Jungle. I love your show and your contribution to the LoL community. I have a question about banning. I've almost listened to all of your podcasts, but I'm not sure, or maybe I don't remember you talking about banning in depth, which is fine, I guess, because it's not that important. I started banning Zed like 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
What a coincidence from earlier in this episode. 2 years ago because I had a mental block against him. I didn't stop. So I'm just always banning Zed and never playing against him. There are many worse matchups for my champs, but I'm just learning to play around that. Do you think it's a valid start to just ban one champ and go with it for eternity?
Well, we've already answered that one, right? Definitely not.
Generating very long-term anxiety. So yeah, it's not realistic. So you think, Curtis, it's not realistic to ban one champion forever? Because your champ pool cycles, and yes, it doesn't make sense. If your champ's good into that champ, why would you be banning that?
Yeah, look, I don't think... Okay, there is a difference between banning something because it's genuinely really good into your champion and that is kind of all you play. Say you're a one trick. Let's say you one trick Echo and you never wanted to verse Akali ever. That's fine. Because that's like a really, really bad matchup. You're an Echo one trick. That matchup's probably never really going to change. Like, it's a really bad matchup. It always probably will be a really bad matchup. You know, I think it kind of makes sense. But I think if you have if the ban isn't that bad for your champion, that's a bit of a red flag.
Yeah.
You know, you should be able to play a matchup unless it's like a super, super hard counter, right? Especially if you have a multiple champ pool where it's like you've got champs in your pool that could deal with that champion if you really needed to, but you're still banning it anyway because you quote unquote prefer not to verse it.
Technically, you're sort of disadvantaging yourself there for no reason, right? In a way.
That's a red flag then, right? So in the case of if you are a one trick and it is a really bad matchup, yes, but in your case, no, that doesn't make sense. And I would stop banning it and I would really try to face your fears and learn how to verse it. I've actually got a great how to counter Zed on my YouTube, actually. Highly recommend checking that out.
All right, we'll do one more here. This one's from James. The title of this email is, what does skill look like in League of Legends? I wrote in recently, and I like hearing other people's questions, but a friend of mine said something during a game that completely ticked me off, and I wanted an answer from you two because I trust your opinions. We were talking about the warding changes, where now it shows where the ward will land on the map. My friend was complaining that it takes skill expression away from the game because now more people will be warding over walls that they didn't know they could before. I was really annoyed that he called this skill expression because a few games later, he proceeded to call a Yone who took over the game a champ that requires no skill to win. I started to get concerned that skill is just a buzzword that players use to make themselves feel superior. To test if skill mattered or not, I played my very first games as Azir and Zed. I lost through a Vega as I played Azir, but every single death was a fundamental decision-making mistake from taking bad fights, not helping my jungler during a counter gank if we get into ward and lean. My Zed game was a ton of fun, and I felt like I clicked with him instantly. Even though I messed up the combo every time because I've never played him before, I managed to get a triple kill because I stuck to the champion's assassin identity, zeroed in on squishy targets I knew I could kill, positioned well, then face rolled my keyboard for the triple. My friend applauded my efforts and made an effort to point out that what I did requires no skill, but I general game plan to win a team fight. It could come down to the idea that a good game plan executed poorly is still better than a poor plan executed well, as you've said in past episodes. I'm curious what your thoughts are on skill expression in League of Legends. What is skillful and what isn't? Is skill as important as people believe it is, or is overhyped? Because think about when we played back in Season 2, Season 3. Timers. Nothing was timed. You know how right now you press tab, guys, and you get to see Dragon and Baron? You get to like type that in the chat for Dragon Baron. Now camps, enemy camps, buffs, everything's timed. You know,
and the game's never been harder. It's so hard.
And skill is still very clearly distinguished with the ladder rank. So, you know, these are things that these are very petty things. Like, Riot have to put these into the game
because the game is so hard.
It's so goddamn hard. Again, bringing it back to the VOD that we had in Curtis's clips. Like, you know, dying to... Do you think that the skill expression that League's removed from the game has prevented the Vlad from, you know, Echo dying there? What's his name again?
Zaliban.
So, yeah, like, these, exactly what you said, skill is a buzzword.
And it is a bit of a buzzword. Like, what does he actually mean by skill in that?
James is spot on here. It's about making themselves feel superior. It's like...
Well, first thing I want to say, you know, so there's a huge red flag, one of the things that his friend said. The Yone thing is so, so, so wrong. It is unbelievable. Yone is an incredibly difficult champion to win games with. Like up there, in my opinion, top 10 hardest mid lane champs to actually win a game of League of Legends with in mid lane. And it's so funny that this always comes from people that don't play Yone. You will never hear this from someone who plays Yone, ever. Like, you get that person to play Yone and win a game of League of Legends with Yone, and then ask them that exact same question, I guarantee you they won't come to the same conclusion. I've heard that exact same sentence from a myriad of people, and then they play the champion, and then they get annihilated, and they're like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, this is actually harder than I thought. Anyone can play, yes, Yone lane is fine. Mid game to late game with Yone is a different ball game, okay? So I already you can tell that this guy is probably not the most educated and an advanced thinker, right? But I think when skill, he means probably I'm assuming when he thinks of skill, he thinks of like mechanical expression.
His definition of it. Yeah, I think everyone has
like
different.
The mechanical micro and micro max mechanics max. Like, I think it means something different for everyone depending on what your background of gaming is. So for him, it might mean mechanical expression matters the most. So for him, skill is doing advanced, you know, Kiana combos or LeBlanc, hitting LeBlanc chains. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. Maybe that's his version of skill. For other people, maybe it might be how do they think about win conditions and how intentional are they are in their lull states and think about their role in the composition. For other people, and what I deem to be what I think what makes the game so hard is the consistency of the basics executed well.
My exact definition of what skill is.
That is the hardest thing about League of Legends. Like,
that's the skill in any craft, Curtis. That's what the skill is. Consistency of the basics.
Consistency of the basics. How clean are their basics? Like, this is why still to this day, I sound like a broken record here. Chovy gives me goosebumps. Straight up. When you watch Chovy play lane, it is like he was doing every basic flawlessly every game. The CSing, flawless. Never dies to a gank. Beautiful tethering. Very rarely messing trades up. Knows his limits in every matchup. That's on terrifying. Every champion.
It's terrifying.
It is unbelievable.
It's robotic.
It is robotic. Watch his lane phase. He's not doing anything special. That's not... The fancy plays, his mid-game is not what makes him fancy in my mind. It's the early lane. To play versus a high-pressure jungler in a skill matchup with not missing CS and getting beautiful resets and good trades, that is mind-boggling to me. Because you be in that situation, you're going to miss all these farm, you're going to mess up your wave set, you're going to die to a gank, I guarantee you.
Yep.
That is what makes League of Legends hard. It's the execution of the basics. And that is skill, in my opinion. And again, this is not objective, right? I mean, this is just all subjective. There's no definition of what skill is in League of Legends. I think it's a very multifaceted thing, though. And you could isolate any one of the... Mechanical expression is a skill. How good you are mechanically. How good is your clicking. You could isolate each and every one of these as a quote-unquote skill. It's however you want to dice it up, however you want to see it. So if he says that requires, what requires no skill? Is it the positioning that requires no skill? The foresight to be in that location, the target selection, the mechanical execution? There is many things, as we all know in League of Legends, that goes into a team fight, right? Like it's being at the right place at the right time, knowing who to target, hitting your abilities, timing your abilities, you know, all that stuff. There's a lot of stuff that goes in.
It's funny how he did the whole Zed combo and stuff like that, and he's saying that that's no skill. Zed, you can lose track of your shadow very easily.
Yeah, and Zed can be basic.
Because you just press R, it looks like it's easy.
Well, it can be, but it's like, you know, again, put yourself in that situation, have the discipline to be farmed and be in that situation and get in the right position to get onto the back line. Like, it's not that easy. Yeah.
Zed's not a champ nothing in my
is,
mind.
Nothing is really easy. No. Like, again, we sound like a hypocrite every episode, right? Like, every individual thing in League of Legends is easy. Individually.
It's a computer game with four button, like, click mouse.
Pressing
like,
Q?
Technically, you can do exactly what Trovy does, technically. Yes. It's not like traditional sports where it's like, I can't actually kick the ball like Ronaldo does. Like, it's impossible.
That's right.
You know, for me.
Yes, there's a biological, you know, factor there. But I think that, like, everything individually, each independent thing is easy. But it's the combining multiple things consistently over hundreds of games is what makes them crazy. That's what makes League hard. Yep. Right? Yeah.
All right, so I think that wraps up our episode today. Final reminder as well, if you're a top laner, send in our VODs to our email, brokenbyconceptshow@gmail.com. Any rank, reviewing by Panther next episode. We're going to learn about top lane next episode.
And leave your roast comments to Charlie in the comments. We want to see them.
Yeah.
We'll give him a thumbs up.
Thumbs up. Why would he get a thumbs up? He's not getting a thumbs up.
No, the hate for the shitting on Charles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Going to get roasted.
Yeah, I think the emoji is going to have to be more creative than that,
that's
Curtis.
Right. We'll get creative.
Good work, guys. Keep on improving. Keep three blocking, process reviewing. We'll see you next time.